is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
Welcome into the show on this Monday morning. You're listening to First Up here on TSN 1050, streaming worldwide, tsn1050.ca, and on the iHeartRadio Canada app. Aaron Kurolnik and Carla Koliakova with you. We'll be joined by Mark Dominic in about 30 minutes to recap Week 13 in the NFL, which is not over yet, Coco, because it's a big Monday nighter between the Pats and the Bills down in Buffalo. Cannot wait for that. There was some Canadian football played yesterday. I was down at the Argos game against the Ticats. Honestly, I did not really enjoy the experience. I will not lie. There was a lot of drunk hooligans, mostly from Hamilton, who were a little bit too invested in the game and the chirps. And I've been to so many Argos games. That was not a very pleasant experience, not to mention the Argos also lost to Hamilton. However, I did see Al's brother there. And
wow. Out of 22,000 people, you spotted Al's brother.
Well, we had a little rendezvous arranged, yes. I needed to see the legend in person. I hadn't seen my boy Al's brother in quite some time. This guy was telling me that he went to a bar before the game. People are buying him shots. People are, oh, Al's brother, taking pictures with Al's brother. He is a big-time celeb. And listen, if you lose as many football bets as he has, you become notorious for better or for worse. And good for Al's brother. He's looking good, doing a great job on Leafs Lunch with Julia, and we look forward to them coming up today at noon. As far as the on-field performance for the Argos, up 12-0 at half, and lose by giving up 27 points in the second half to Hamilton, led by Dane Evans, who was, what, 16 for 16, and just torched the Argos in the second half. And Hamilton's going to the Grey Cup to play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who beat the Saskatchewan Rough Riders yesterday. Pretty crazy day in the CFL, for sure.
The redemption tour for Dane Evans, who wants retribution for the last time he participated in a Grey Cup. Who will he be facing? The Winnipeg Blue Bombers in a rematch, because they won their matchup against Saskatchewan Rough Riders. But he talked about the drunk hooligans at the game. Steve Simmons tweeted right before the game that he noticed two amazing things at BMO. 2 hours before kickoff, the parking lot was full of tailgaters, which is something not normally known to happen at CFL games. And the parking charge was like $10 less than what it normally is. So they were encouraging people to go down there and tailgate like NFL fans do. And maybe that's a reason why things got out of hand. And 22,000, I mean, the most, the highest attendance at an Argos game since they moved to BMO Field. So I think a lot of things that they wanted to accomplish over the weekend, you know, you talk about, you know, trying to promote the game on Thursday with sending the players, the Argo players, to the Raptors game, which is against COVID violations, which led to the discussion of McLeod Bethel-Thompson being available or not being available. He ended up being available because he tested negative 2 days in a row, and but he clearly played like he was still in quarantine because, man, he was rough yesterday. And I think the Argos, you know, were victims of their own mistakes and, you know, basically shot themselves in the foot because they had many chances to put the game away early on, especially in the first half, by, you know, going for it, you know, on short down, third and short yardage at the goal line, opted for the field goal, opted for the points, but there's only so many times in a football game where if you give up that many opportunities, especially when you're dominating most of the play and you don't actually make the team pay for it on the scoreboard, it comes back to bite you just like it did yesterday. And Hamilton took full advantage of that in the second half.
That's exactly it. I think the Argos put up, was it 18 or 19 points? I believe 6 field goals for Boris Beattie. So, yeah, not producing the touchdowns that you need, and Hamilton was able to punch in a bunch of those in the second half to ultimately get it done. And then there was everything that transpired after the game where it was alleged that a Ticats fan spit on an Argos player, and there was an essentially a melee that ensued on the concourse with Argos players in full helmets and gear taking on fans, and not a good look for the Canadian Football League. Honestly, a tough weekend for the Argos and public relations. I mean, everything that happened with Bethel Thompson going to the Raptors game and that violated the protocols, as you mentioned, then I don't really know exactly what happened with regards to the spitting incident and whatever happened, but even if that is true, you can't go and fight fans in
right.
on the concourse. That's just a very bad decision, and I imagine there will be some repercussions for those Argos who decided to do that, but I don't know, their season's over. Maybe there won't be, and we'll talk to Dave Naylor at 9:30 when he joins us, and pretty crazy stuff. There's video circulating. I don't know if we've actually put anything out on TSN, but they are like fan videos of people just recording absolute mayhem ensuing. Mm. Like players like climbing up through fences and like coming up on where all the fans are just walking around and punches being thrown. It's a wild scene, a very yeah. wild scene. And I don't know what security was doing. Clearly not much. But that was a very bad look for the CFL for sure. So we'll talk to the nail gun about that. We'll also talk to Mark Dominic, as I mentioned, at 8:45. And Jesse Pollock will join us. A very rare appearance for one of the stars of TSN. Let's be honest here. This guy's on 7-Eleven commercials, serving up Slurpees and convenience stores. And he's killing it.
Can we refer to him and give him the label Winnipeg Superfan?
Oh, I think that goes without saying. He would embrace
that. Nav Bhatia is the super fan. That's his label, right? So let's give Jesse the label. I mean, obviously, he's a big part of what Bar Down is and their success. And like you said, he's a star in the commercial world. He's got great hair right now.
Debatable.
And he is a diehard Winnipeg super fan.
Well, I mean, it was an amazing day if you were a Winnipeg sports fan yesterday, starting with the CFL game, going into the Jets and Leafs game. And why don't we listen to the celebrations for the Winnipeg Jets after beating the Leafs last night? Listen, Winnipeg played a great game. You put up a sixth spot on the Leafs, win 6-3, great performance, very heated final couple minutes for the Jets. There's a lot of fighting and Logan Stanley went full Johnny drama. That's how this clip opens. And then you'll hear from Mark Scheifele as well. Just how important that W was for Winnipeg last night.
Hey, boys. Is there anything better than beating the Leafs? Hey?
No.
Anything better? This goes for this guy. Let's go!
Oh, man. Listen, I am sure... You know, you play in a city like Winnipeg, you hear about the Leafs constantly. You're watching TSN, it's just Leafs, 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 15 of 17, Leafs, Leafs, Leafs. And it must feel sweet. And I'm sure Jesse, when he joins us at 9:10, will be very pumped about his city's performance in the sports scene, but certainly the Winnipeg Jets beating the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I am very curious now, because, I mean, yeah, I didn't really think that Pionk would be suspended for the Sandin knee-on-knee.
Oh, but he's going to get suspended.
I guess in lieu of no punishment during the game. I mean, if Pionk got a five-minute major for that call and game misconduct or something, then maybe a suspension wouldn't necessarily be in line. But I think the fact that there was no discipline at all during the game from the officials, that might lead me to believe that it could be a game, maybe even two.
Yeah, I think he's getting minimum one, potentially two. I might even think that Jason Spezza probably gets a game, probably a fine for sure. And I'm curious to see how the league handles the McDavid one, because if it was anyone but McDavid, and you get a five in a game when a guy who is bloodied and bangs his head off the glass, you think that there would be some supplemental discipline there, but... That's one that I'm curious to think, but I would expect the Department of Player Safety to at least discipline Pionk and maybe Spezza as well too. Even though I don't think Spezza, his intent was to actually he wasn't going straight UFC and throwing a flying knee at the Pionk's head. It was the situation of the position that Pionk put him in, where he was diving for the puck and he just tried to make a hit on him. Going to the ice and knee hit head. If Pionk was standing up, that would have just been a body check. I wouldn't expect Spezza would have done anything dirty. He's not that type of player. He doesn't have the reputation to do it. But that's what happens when the referees don't take control of the game, right? Things get escalated, and that should be where the spotlight is. The spotlight should be on the referees not calling the things that they need to be called.
as Dreg said when he joined us maybe 20 minutes ago talking about Spezza, you could see how pissed off he was on the bench about what was going on, too. And his next opportunity, I mean, listen, right or wrong, what happened happened with Spezza. And I think there's a pretty decent chance that both could see some kind of discipline, whether it's a fine or a suspension. I suppose we'll probably find out that news later today. We have winners of the weekend on the other side here on First Up. Mark Dominic, our NFL analyst on Week 13 in the NFL, and we'll tee up Bills-Patriots, a game you can hear right here on TSN 1050 this evening. Korolnik and Koliakovo, First Up continues after this.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose.
The weekend is over.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Ah, but don't fret.
You're
This is Winners of the Weekend.
Every Monday morning here on First Up, we select our Winners of the Weekend. And we are big fans of my first winner, Gardner Minshew. The jean shorts, the mustache, previously with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was starting yesterday for the Philadelphia Eagles with
Minshew
Jalen Hurts.
Mania.
Banged up. Minshew Mania is back. He went 20 for 25. 242 pass yards and 2 touchdowns. The Eagles beating the Jets. And, man, did you see his celly with his dad after the game? What the hell's going on with those two guys?
How about the outfit he wore to the game? That was top-notch and top-gunnish.
Minshew Mania, I can't get enough of it. And, listen, Jalen Hurts, very exciting quarterback. You know he's the number two fantasy football quarterback because he just runs all over opposing defenses, but Minshew Mania just as fun as Jalen Hurts. And my other winner of the weekend, it's the Detroit Lions. They will not be going winless. They picked up a W against the Minnesota Vikings on a last second miracle. Let's hear how it sounded on the Detroit Lions radio network.
First victory of the year on the line. Goff's got it. Back, looks, throws, and
yes!
Caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! They did it! Amon-Ra St. Brown in the receiving end! Oh, they're rushing the field! They've done it! 3 zeros on the clock! This game is over! It's over! And how big is that? Oh, my goodness!
And shout out to the Detroit Lions and Dan Campbell because good karma went their way yesterday. Every member of their team was wearing special t-shirts, hat, and a helmet decal on Sunday to honor the victims of the Oxford Wildcats High School from the tragic shooting events that transpired last week. So you talk about good karma in this world. Shout out to them for addressing that. But in saying that as well, totally forgot what I was going to go here. So go ahead, Arad.
Okay. Arad, your winners of the weekend. Take it away, buddy.
The fourth seed in the college football playoff, Cincinnati, the Bearcats, baby, the first non-Power 5 team to make the playoffs. So big news there, good for the Bearcats. Chris Boucher finally looks like he found his game again. He's giving the Raptors some much-needed scoring off the bench. Raptors going 2-0 this weekend.
And defense.
And defense, exactly. Finally. Thanks, Jack. Nice. Thank you for waking up with us. And finally, Chris Armas, the former TFC coach. According to Taylor Twellman just about an hour ago, he got hired to be part of Ralph Ragnick's new staff at Manchester United. So congratulations, Chris Armas, winner of the weekend for failing upwards.
Nice, Chris Armas. And what I forgot to say, what I was going to mention about the Detroit Lions, is if anybody watching football wants to learn about how to coach defense in the dumbest way possible, just go back and watch that last 2 minutes of the Minnesota Vikings playing a three-man rush prevent defense against a team that has not won a game all season. And they called a timeout before the final play, and they literally had six guys standing at the back of the end zone, allowing the Detroit Lions to score that last. But hey, good karma went their way.
Little, I've got a couple survivor pool frustration still there. Right?
Yes. Well, speaking of survivor pools, a shout out and big winner of the weekend to the last two remaining contestants in the First Up survivor pool. Gene's Picks 2 and Anthony's Picks 2. If you are listening, text 105050, send an email to 105050. We'd love to get you on the air so that we could actually dissect your picks going into this weekend, because you are the final two remaining for the massive prize that will be rewarded for the last man standing.
And Gene and Anthony could probably give us some betting advice. Clearly, they are awesome at picking winners. And final two in the Survivor Pool. Man, we were talking like a couple weeks ago. Man, like there's going to be 20 winners. And all of a sudden, favorites going down week after week. And yet another example yesterday with Minnesota. What an embarrassment losing to Detroit without DeAndre Swift, their best offensive player. So that's not a good
That's embarrassing.
Sign. That Noodles, I completely agree. That is embarrassing.
There was four people left. One of them went out with the Oakland Raiders, Vegas Raiders, pardon me, and the Minnesota Vikings. And the two survivors had Miami and Kansas City. So good luck to the remaining two guys. Like I said, get a hold of us. We'd love to get you on the air and see what your picks are. A couple winners for me. Obviously, all the news coming out of Vancouver. Bruce Boudreaux, imagine sitting on your couch on a Sunday and getting a two-year contract to come back into the NHL and coach a Vancouver Canucks team.
Hello, Bruce.
I knew it.
You answered that call. So you are a winner of the weekend. And going back to the college football ranks, the Michigan Wolverines. I told you guys that Michigan was going to steamroll the Iowa Hawkeyes, and they did it in the Big Ten Championship. Just demolishing them. I think it was 45-3, whatever the score was, but solidifying the number two seed in the college football playoff. Jim Harbaugh finally gets his day at Michigan, leading them to the matchup against the Georgia Bulldogs. Won't be an easy matchup for them. They drew a hard contestant in that playoff. Talk about Cincinnati, the four seed, Georgia, the three, Alabama, SEC champions. And that's where I'm going next, because I cannot believe that Alabama was a 7-point underdog in the SEC championship, coached by Nick Saban. Like, you talk about easy money? Like, how are you not all over that?
My focus is the Canadian football.
Oh, my God.
My expertise does not extend to college football.
And you know what? There was Nick Saban on the podium after the game basically saying the same thing to everybody else going into that game. 20 fingers. Let's listen to it.
You guys gave us a lot of really positive rat poison. The rat poison that you usually give us is usually fatal. But the rat poison that you put out there this week was yummy.
Basically saying you guys had us as 7-point underdogs. Oh, were we licking our chops at that spread, knowing that we were playing at home in Alabama for the SEC championship, and rightfully so, they win and are the number one seed in the college football playoff. So those are my winners of the weekend.
On the subject of college football, because he was never really relevant in the NFL, I guess maybe briefly in the CFL, today is Johnny Manziel's birthday. How old do you think Johnny Manziel is, Coco?
31.
He's 29, but like honestly, I was like, is he 37? Is he like, how old is this guy? It seems like, I think I remember how incredible he was in his Heisman Trophy winning season. He was incredible going in the first round, and was he ever a bust in the NFL? And then he comes to the CFL. It's funny because his name came up on Friday once the McLeod Bethel Thompson fiasco was breaking with the Argos, in that I think the last time that there was such a discussion about the Canadian Football League was when Manziel was traded to Hamilton and was going to be the guy, the quarterback for them. I remember on Overdrive, Naylor was on talking about that, and Naylor was on Overdrive in the same respect on Friday talking about the Bethel Thompson situation. So it's funny that it is indeed Manziel's birthday today, 29 years old. Apparently he wants to attempt to become a professional golfer. We should also wish Nick Ritchie a happy birthday today as well. So I'm hopeful. Tomorrow, the Leafs play Columbus at home. They have Columbus, Tampa, and Chicago all at home this week. Nick Ritchie, for his birthday, he picked up another assist yesterday. Or was it yesterday on Saturday night?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. And man, he's been rolling with the assists, but the goals still have not emerged yet for Mr. Ritchie. It's coming. It's coming.
You know, I was looking at that game yesterday, and when things started to get heated, you can see the wires cross with Simmons, with Clifford. They were going out. They were sharks searching for blood, is what they were doing. Because that was an opportunity for them to make an impact not only in the game, but with their teammates. I'm really surprised that Nick Ritchie didn't do the same thing. Because, I mean, you talk about how much that guy has been struggling offensively. Yesterday was the perfect opportunity for him to go out and stand up for his teammates and, you know, maybe go out and you know, make a big hit on one of their top players, get into a scuffle with one of their top guys like Scheifele and Wheeler, sort of the same thing like Dubois did. And maybe if you get the chance, drop the gloves with somebody, sort of something like Kyle Clifford did and Wayne Simmons did. But again, you just sit back and he just watches. And it's like, does this guy not understand that the opportunity with this team is slowly dwindling away because he's not putting up the offensive production? But like I said, and I've always said about Nick Ritchie, if you're not putting off offensively, which is struggles that a lot of people go through, and we're all hoping that he bounces out of it, go out and do something different that can make an impact in the game. And clearly yesterday was a missed opportunity for Nick Ritchie to do that, because it was the perfect game, perfect scenario that allowed him to do it.
Nick Ritchie's got points in three straight games, Coco. I don't know. He's producing a little bit offensively.
When you watch assists. Okay, but when you watch Nick Ritchie play right now, are you impressed by the impact
that
he's making?
Absolutely not.
That's all I'm saying.
I mean, the ice time, not exactly there either, and deservedly so. In any case, it's his birthday. Let's be nice to him. It's celebrating the big B-Day.
Happy birthday, Nick Ritchie.
Happy birthday,
Nick. Hope you have a great day. Again, I just – yesterday, I'm watching that whole Dubois and Matthews thing go, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, this is a perfect situation for Nick Ritchie to make a name for himself. And I didn't see it happen.
Yeah, it was a fiasco, a gong show, as Austin Matthews termed it, and we'll discuss it with a man who was there in Winnipeg last night, Jesse Pollock from Bar Down, our good friend, a honorary member of the First Up Soup Club as well. So we'll talk to Jesse in about 30 minutes' time, live from Winnipeg. Coming up on the other side, Mark Dominic, our NFL analyst on Week 13. We will look ahead to tonight's Monday Nighter between the Patriots and the Bills. I have a feeling that Mark likes the Bills tonight, but we will confirm that assertion when he joins us next.
I feel ready. This is the song that is played to start every Sunday NFL countdown, but this is our Monday NFL countdown with our boy, Mark Dominic.
Bang! It is indeed, and a big, big day and night ahead in the city of Buffalo, New York. The Buffalo Bills hosting Mr. Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. I cannot wait for this game, Carlo. Mm-hmm. I know you are in the same boat as a Bills fan. Our producer, Arad, a huge Patriots fan. It's getting a little vicious between you two. The chirps, the barbs, just the epithets thrown at one another. A little bit unnerving for me sitting here.
The name of our next kids is on the line between me and Arad.
That's true. That is true. So you will be naming your child Arad if the Patriots win, and Arad will be naming his child Carlo. So very small stakes ahead on the field relative to what's going on this radio show. Let's welcome in Mark Dominic, former GM of the Tampa Bay Bucks, and our Monday morning NFL analyst here on First Up. What's up, Mark?
Good morning. Yeah, happy to be on with you. That's a little bit of a bet. I like what you're doing.
You like that, Mark?
Yes, I think I do. I'm not sure what's going on, but it sounds intriguing and risky at the entire point. But it's going to be a big game, obviously, tonight.
Not so much risk for me because I'm not worried about having kids anymore, and I'm not sure if Rod has any plans to have kids, but a fun little bet between the both of us.
Who do you think will be winning this bet, Mark? Will it be the Bills hosting New England, or can the Pats get it done on the road on Monday Night Football?
You know, I still think the Buffalo Bills will win the game tonight. As much as the Pats have played so well, kind of like the Dolphins have been able to string a bunch of wins together, I just don't think that the Pats have really – when you start to go back, Titans were in a funk. Atlanta has not been that great. Cleveland's been in a funk. Now, they slaughtered some of those teams and beat them pretty good. But, you know, I'm going back to when I look at the Patriots, you know, they lost early on to the Saints, but they lost to the Bucks, they lost to the Cowboys. I just think that these are the kind of games where we're going to see who New England really is, and I think New England's going to be a touchdown short tonight. So I'm going with the Buffalo Bills just because I believe that the passing game will be there for them. And whether that's Stephon Diggs or whomever, but I just feel like the Buffalo Bills also defensively will do a better job kind of bottling up the run game and making Mac Jones have to beat him, and I think it's going to be tough.
The best thing we did this morning was have Mark Dominic join us on as a guest, because my day just got off to an amazing start hearing you say that, Mark. Because all I've been hearing for a whole week is Patriots this, Patriots that, all Bill Belichick this, Bill Belichick that. It's like the one thing that I've sort of digested all week, and especially in the slate of football yesterday, is in week 13, what you think you know about a team is the complete opposite about what you know about a team. Because every time we put a team out, they find a way to win. Every time we pump a team's tires, they find a way to lose. And I just think this is setting up for the same scenario for the New England Patriots. Everyone's talking about, oh, their six-game win streak. Oh, Bill Belichick's back. Mac Jones, rookie of the year. You know, their running game and stuff like that. And people forget, like, people just think that the Bills are a bunch of scrubs. They've been one of the best teams in football. This is the chance for them to show the world on primetime Monday Night Football in front of Bills Mafia that they own the AFC East.
Oh, God. Oh, I love it. You know, and look, this is their opportunity. You're right, because, you know, they have a chance to be 9-4, the first team to win 9 games in the AFC, and they haven't even hit their bye yet. But that is that night. But I will give you happiness, Carlo. Today is comfort day at our school here in Nashville, Tennessee, and my daughter has her Bills hat on. So I just need you to know that.
Oh, comfort day. Yes, my favorite day of the year now.
Right? So, yeah, I had no idea, and she's like, I'm wearing my Bills hat today. I'm like, in Nashville. I love it. Dude, go Titans, right? So it's a good time. But, yeah, I mean, this is – I think we're seeing that, right? We're seeing those teams that we kept saying they've got nothing left, and then you see Pittsburgh go, wait, we're still around. Or, you know, the Chargers are like, don't forget about us, you know. And the Kansas City Chiefs, everybody was like putting, you know, dirt on the grave, and now Kansas City's put off, what, 5 straight wins and just on fire. So, you know – the team that I was a pump and now have to dump is Minnesota. I really thought Minnesota was going to make a run, and they just have not been able to do it.
There you go. And what you think, so, you know, you don't.
It's hard. I mean, Detroit won, so what do you know? But that's, you know, the whole thing about tonight's game is going to be, to me, is can Buffalo get any type of run semblance going? And if they can, obviously, as we know, with Josh Allen and everything he can do, with the football outside, I think they're gonna throw the heck out of the ball. I think they're gonna throw it like 35 to 40 times. I think they're gonna be dumping it down to the backs. I think Dawson Knox is gonna be heavily involved in there and take their shots. But if they can get a run game going, then I think it's gonna be even a better win than 7 points.
In conversation with our NFL analyst Mark Dominic here on First Up, you mentioned the Kansas City Chiefs. Yes, they've won 5 in a row. They beat the Denver Broncos on Sunday Night Football 22-9. That's right, only 9 points allowed by KC, and it was on a Javonte Williams dump-off pass with 5 minutes left. Didn't really mean anything. Kansas City's defense was outstanding. But the offense remains questionable. I think 257 yards of total offense for Patrick Mahomes. Did not throw a passing touchdown yesterday. I guess that's back-to-back games for Mahomes, no passing TDs. What do you make of the Chiefs and kind of almost their reversal, going from an offensive juggernaut to, at least in the past 5 games, a very, very quality defensive football team, Mark?
Yeah, it's you know, Spagnuolo's defense is very difficult, very complicated, and it's very verbose, meaning there's a lot of words, but there's also a lot of responsibilities, and it becomes a very hard defense to play. But once you get it down, you can perform better. And I think that because they have younger players on that defense, it's taken them a little bit of time to kind of get to that point where they're playing more consistent. I wasn't sure if they were going to get there because of how bad it was at the beginning of the season. But they've been able to pull it off. I mean, what, 3 or 4? I mean, during this win streak, let's say it this way, I think they're giving up on average about 12, 13 points a game over 5 games. That's, I don't care who you're playing. You're giving up 12 points a game. You're doing something special. And the nice thing here is they're going through a period of time where they're not, like you've said, they're not having to rely on Patrick Mahomes to win the game. You know, in fact, you know, yesterday, like you said, he only threw the ball like under 30 times. And so it gave him a chance to stay in it and win it without having to have Patrick be amazing and turn the ball over a ton of times. And so I just think that the Kansas City defense right now, I think what's setting them apart is their ability to, they're tackling extremely well, especially in the secondary, and having 2 guys on the field that I think are really good players that people don't know. I think you saw them a little bit last night, but the 2 linebackers, and Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, one's a rookie this year, one's a second-year player, have really made, to me, a huge difference on that defense across the board, because they're fast, physical, and they can get downhill, but they can cover you as well. When those two guys are on the field, that's a young, fast defense, and that's exciting, and I think that's been a big part of our change.
Well, Kansas City is another one of those teams. What you think you know is that you know absolutely nothing, because all we did all year was obliterate how bad their defense was. Well, clearly it's their defense that's leading the way now, and everyone still expects them to, you know, heave the ball all the way across the field to all their receivers and stuff, but their offense has been what's struggling lately. So that's the NFL for you, but the Chiefs are finding ways to win, and that's what good football teams do, and they're finding a way to do that at the most important time of the year. You talked about big wins, and the Detroit Lions got their big wins. Can we add Mike Zimmer to the book of NFL coaching for dummies? In that, because help me understand, in a 2-minute drill, when you're protecting a lead against a team that has zero wins on the season, why you think a 3-man rush and playing prevent defense is a way to get a victory? I mean, you can even go back to the last play of the game where they call a timeout to try to set up their defense and they have six guys standing at the back of the end zone. Help me understand what the coaching philosophy there is for the Minnesota Vikings, and how good do you feel for the Detroit Lions?
Well, let me start with Detroit. I mean, it's nice because you just kind of assume Jared Goff would have a tip ball or something would happen. They'd lose the game.
Right.
So just to have a win and then go into that locker room, because it's just not there's nothing good about a winless season. And those dudes are out there working every day that people don't understand. It's easy to put them down, and I put Detroit down pretty hard. But here, a couple things on Zimmer. Number one, what I thought was interesting is, you know, when the Minnesota had the ball and it was third down and goal, right? And they threw the ball to Jefferson and got the touchdown, which is great. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I actually thought they'd run the ball no matter what, because if you get stuffed, then it's fourth down, but you're going to run 40 seconds off the clock. Mm-hmm. And you're still going to be up by one. Now, granted, Detroit could go get a field goal then and not a touchdown, but if you run the ball, then you lose 40 seconds off the clock if they don't. And if you get the touchdown, it's the same thing as throwing the ball, right? You're still – so I didn't understand that game management, because I really thought, look, they have no timeouts. Run the ball here. Kick the field goal, and you're going to give them about a minute 10 left on the clock, and you're up by, you know, a point, and you're still winning. They still got to go 50-something yards in a minute 10. That's hard to do, but you can do it. So I was disappointed in that, because I really thought that was backwards, even though it worked and good for Minnesota. But then to your point, I was blown away. With Jared Goff, I don't know how you're not blitzing or sending somebody.
That's what I was saying, screaming at the TV. I'm like, how are you not pressuring this guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing you have to do to Jared. I think that's the one thing that Sean McVay was like, I can't win in these situations. That's why you've got to trade him. And so I was, especially a guy like Zimmer, who's so experienced, and seeing, you know, when they brought Harrison Smith, how he almost had the sack fumbled later in the game, you know, you can get to him, or he's going to dump the ball down. Like, he's going to dump it down. He's not going to take a shot if he feels like he's under pressure. And therefore, we just got to tackle a couple times in bounds, and we're going to win this game. So it was very disappointing and a very hard day to wake up knowing that Minnesota is now on the outside when they should be 6-6 in the sixth seed. Mm-hmm. And now they're the ninth seed, and they're 5-7, and they lost a terrible division game.
Mark, to no one's surprise, Tom Brady shredded the Atlanta Falcons defense. I mean, he has just been so dominant against Atlanta in his career. It's their third straight win for Tampa Bay. 15 catches for Chris Godwin. Gronk had a couple of touchdowns. But my question surrounds a player who didn't play this week. That is Antonio Brown. He was suspended 3 games for misrepresenting his vaccine status. And there are some questions around Tampa about whether or not we will see him again in a Bucs uniform after what he did. How do you think this situation unfolds?
You will see him in a Bucs uniform after what he did. You know, it's the tolerate till I can replace. And Tony, as good as Chris Godwin has been, and this is going to be probably Chris's last year, obviously, in Tampa, he's on the franchise tag and about to hit free agency, and somebody's going to pay him as a number one receiver because he's showing you that he can be that. They're going to want Antonio Brown to be there with Mike Evans next year, and one more, I think, the last year for Tom there. So, and Gronk. And so, you know, if Antonio Brown wasn't playing well, if he hadn't shown that he's got juice within the organization, if Tom Brady wasn't going to bat for him, Antonio Brown would be already cut. Yeah. So the fact that they haven't cut him is because they could just be like, hey, look, we're not going to put up with it. We're just going to let you go. By them not doing something is action. I mean, if they get by Tuesday of this week, that's the 4:00 is when the cutoff is when players get paid. If you're on the roster at 4:01 Eastern Standard Time, you're going to get your check that week. If you're cut before that, you don't get paid that week. And so I expect nothing but Antonio Brown to be on this. And it's really kind of a good timing, and it sounds terrible, but it's a good timing because he's still not 100%, and this gives him 2 more weeks of being ready to go. And then, you know, come postseason, You're going to have those three wide receivers out there with Fournette and Gronk, and it's going to be like, what are we going to do now? How are we stopping these guys? So they got Buffalo next, obviously, and Saints without Antonio Brown, but they've been playing without him for almost the whole season, and they've been fine. But I think inaction means action, and that means I think he's there on the team.
Do you think that we see news come out of Chicago today about the future of Matt Nagy? I mean, they played a game yesterday. They named Andy Dalton the starting quarterback. They played against the best team in the league in the Arizona Cardinals, who impressively moved to 7-0 on the road this year. But, you know, it wasn't really much of a game or a fight for the Bears as Arizona dominated from start to finish. What do you think happens in Chicago? It's clear that, you know, Nagy's fate is going to be settled one way or another, but do you think they pull the card on him today?
I don't think they do. It's not usually in the Bears' DNA in terms of ownership that they do that during this season. Just kind of a football team that, to me, tries to play it out. And there's really no big rush to do that. I think you probably get Justin Fields. I mean, obviously, Arizona was very efficient yesterday. I mean, the first, three drives are all touchdowns off those interceptions and things. So Arizona is a team that no one talks about that's putting together an amazing season. You said 7-0. But I think for the Bears, I don't see them making a change this week because I just don't think that there's that one coach where we got to hurry up and go make sure we get in line and have an interview with that guy because he's the guy. I don't feel that guy. And again, I don't think that's in Chicago's MO. And I think what they're going to try to do is they'll work Justin Fields back in again and see where this goes under Nagy so that the kid has a chance to get comfortable instead of having somebody new come in there and now trying to learn something different that's going to be different than the next year, right? Because if you bring an interim in, he's going to change some of the stuff probably within the organization. They'll keep somewhat of the same playbook, but it's just going to be a different mindset. And then you go in the offseason, you're like, okay, now we're going to have another different mindset, and you just don't want to flood a rookie. I just don't think it's worth the change right now.
Mark, we talk about the AFC East with the Patriots and the Bills tonight. The Miami Dolphins have been playing some great football of late. They have won five straight after a 20-9 win. Yesterday, they have held their opposition to 10 points or fewer in four of five. But it's been Tua who, I mean, much maligned. A lot of questions. Will Miami go and trade for Deshaun Watson? Tua now has posted a 100-plus passer rating in each of his last four games. The only player in Dolphins history with a longer such streak within a season was Dan Marino. What does that mean to you, if anything?
I don't know if it means anything at all. It means here's the amazing thing, right? They're on their bye week this late in the year, and they come out Jets and Saints. Okay, so it's two games where you sit there and say they should win based off of how they've been playing, especially like you mentioned, defensively just being – I mean, you played the Baltimore Ravens. Now, some of these teams aren't juggernauts. Houston's obviously not a juggernaut. Jets, Giants, no one's really – throwing points around the board, but you're doing what you're supposed to do against those teams. They get to come back out and pop the Jets again, then Saints. If they do that, they're suddenly 8-7. How'd this happen? But you roll off all those wins, and you got the Titans and the Patriots, which, we'll see what happens. But this team has been able to, I think, find ways with Tua. I think up to yesterday, they didn't quite get as involved. But I thought since they've involved Miles Gaskins more, mm-hmm. I thought they were a better football team. It's kind of like with the Bucs. They've like, hey, you know what, Ronald Jones, leave him to the side. Let's get Leonard Fournette in there. We're going to ride him. I think they found that Myles Gaskin is an important part of what they want to do overall offensively, which is helping because he catches the ball so out of the backfield. It helps the quarterbacks as well. Now, again, he wasn't as good as he's been in the weeks past, but I think that's been a hidden piece. And then I think on defense, Phillips, the young rookie defensive lineman that they drafted, has really kind of grown. And you could see it during the season. He was getting stronger and better and more comfortable, and he's becoming that sack guy that you're worried about every game. So that's what you have to have on defense is that one guy that you're like, we got to worry about that guy, and Miami's got that guy now.
Mark, you mentioned Baltimore, heavily voted matchup between the Ravens and the Steelers yesterday, which – saw the Steelers come away with a surprise victory, especially all the news surrounding Ben and his future that leaked, before Sunday. But, right down to the last minute, Baltimore scores a touchdown. They decide to go for two, to go for the win instead of secure the extra point and go to overtime. What did you make about the call from Baltimore as you heard Harbaugh's explanation after the game?
I actually like Tomlin's explanation after the game. If you saw what he said, because he goes – were you surprised that Baltimore went for two? He's like, well, they use so much analytics that it wasn't a surprise at all that analytically they'd be thinking that that's what they're, and it was like using
get
analytics
that
against the
20 fingers.
It's really good. And so it's so funny the way that Tomlin just kind of like snapped back at it and's like, it's football first, fellas. And, you know, it's not easy to get a yard or 2 yards anytime. And so I'm not surprised. That's how Baltimore rolls. They play that way. And in this one, it just didn't come back for them. Who knows? You know, I was really surprised by, I think it was Ryan Clark, who I know at ESPN was kind of the first one really coming out after Ben Roethlisberger. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, you're going to go to Mason Rudolph? That's what you're going to do? That's going to be the trick? No, it's Ben's team this year. And we'll see what happens after this year. And certainly he's probably going to move on. But there's no way that anyone in that organization is going to sit down and bench Ben. And we'll see how Ben plays the rest of the way. Yesterday, maybe it was a little bit of a fire he needed to light. And he went back to Johnson, who hasn't had a big impact. I mean, he's been a good player, but hasn't had the impact season I thought he would in his contract year. But they were, you know, consistent. And Fitzpatrick got back in there and started making turnovers. That's what this defense has to do. And that's why they won the game, because they didn't turn the ball over. They were able to, you know, win that one extra possession because of the interception. And to me, that's the difference in this football game.
Well, I think I was reading a stat yesterday that it was like the 25th time that the Steelers and the Ravens have played each other where the game has settled by 3 points or less. I mean, what a rivalry between those two teams. And, you know, just quickly, because I know you in your role right now, you talk to a lot of college athletes, a lot of college coaches and stuff like that. And you mentioned Mike Tomlin, and there was rumors a couple of weeks ago about him potentially being the next USC coach. Do you think after seeing the type of money these college coaches I've been getting in their last two deals, when we talk about Lincoln Riley, you know, for $100 million to coach USC, and Brian Kelly, another $100 million to coach LSU, do you think some of these NFL coaches are saying, I hope one of these NCAA coaches call me and throw me that type of money?
Yeah, Mel Tucker too, right? He got the huge contract as well. So these guys have gotten big contracts. And I think what you'd like to do, and I think Tomlin obviously shot it down, and he's not going to want to do that recruiting thing. That's just not in his DNA at all. I mean, he's great. He's been through the college game, was at University of Cincinnati a long time ago. So he knows what that's all about, but he also understands that's a grind to recruit. But what you do want is you want your name in there, because then you call your agent and be like, or you get your agent to say, you know, dig into that a little bit without my name being attached to it. Because once my name gets attached to it, now let's call the Rooney family, let's call the whoever family and be like, hey, look, I'm happy here. This is an opportunity, but I just want you to know that I'm going to pass that opportunity, but I know you're going to take care of me, right? Because I want you to know that that's not an issue. And because you're right. I mean, the college game has got so much cash going towards it, but the pro game's going to follow. We saw that the cap looks like it's already going to be set next year at 208, which was the maximum the cap was going to be probably for the 2022 season. I was never surprised by that. I always said it was going to be. And I think next year it's going to be $2 million or $230 million, maybe $232 million, $235 million in the cap. What does that mean? That means there's more money there for coaches and for front office, quite frankly. And, you know, they're going to the boats are going to rise, and these coaches are going to continue to make more and more money. So where we start seeing coaches that, you know, get their first deal and it's 5 years, $30 million, it's going to be 5 years, 50 pretty soon, just to be a rookie coach in the National Football League, because there's that much pressure to it. And you sometimes realize you get one shot and you might as well cash in if you can.
Well, AK, we better hurry up and lock in Mark Dominic, because we don't want other people bidding on him to take him away from us on Mondays.
Well, that's how we negotiate our contracts here at TSN, Mark. It's just all the leverage, all the offers thrown at Carlo and I. Come to ESPN. We're like, all right, no. We're loyal to TSN. But just to
we call Jeff,
know,
you're
TSN,
like, you're going to take care of us, right? You're going to take care of us, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, sorry, I don't have your number saved in my phone. It's just 647 random numbers. Thank you, Mark. We appreciate the time. Should be a lot of fun tonight between
Go
Buffalo
Billies.
And New England.
Let's see it. Billies. We'll see if my daughter's happy about wearing that hat tomorrow morning. Yes. We'll see.
Love
All
it,
right,
Mark.
Gentlemen.
We will
Love
speak
it.
To you next Monday. That Take is Mark Dominic, our Monday morning NFL analyst here on First Up. He likes the Bills. That bodes well for you. Ideal result. Buffalo wins by 1, 2, or 3. I'm happy. You're happy. And
everybody's
happy. We win in our picks pool. So that's the result we are supporting here on First Up. Coming up on the other side, wow, Winnipeg royalty. Jesse Pollock, you know him from Bar Down, one of our favorites here on First Up. Have not caught up with Jesse in quite a while.
but he was at the Winnipeg Blue Bombers game yesterday and the Winnipeg Jets game. So 2 for 2 for Pollock, 2 for 2 for the city of Winnipeg. We'll catch up with him.
Does he have a voice today?
We'll find out when he joins us in 5 minutes. We'll be right back.